Ernst & Young on the hook for Lehman.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Accounting firm Ernst & Young may be facing charges for its role in the collapse of Lehman Brothers. New York prosecutors are reportedly saying Ernst & Young helped the now-defunct investment bank hide billions in losses. Joining me live in our L.A. studio to talk about this is our own Eve Trobe. Good morning, Eve.
Good morning.
So, Eve, how did Ernst & Young allegedly defraud investors?
Well, let's go back to when Lehman Brothers collapsed in 2008 and, you know, pretty much kicked off the financial crisis. The New York State Attorney General's office has been investigating that ever since, trying to figure out whether the bank illegally hid some of its debt so that it could report bigger profits that were, of course, not real. That practice, by the way, is called window dressing, appropriately. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that Ernst & Young is likely to face charges that it let Lehman Brothers hide about $50 billion of debt behind some pretty big curtains.
Well, accounting firm Arthur Andersen took the hit for Enron's collapse, and that whole company went down. Are there potentially shades of that with Ernst & Young?
Yes, in the sense that accountants might be held accountable for the financial crisis. We haven't seen that the way that we did when corporations like Enron collapsed several years ago. But these will be civil fraud charges, not criminal, brought against Ernst & Young by the state of New York. And it was a guilty verdict in a criminal case that brought down Arthur Andersen. And though Ernst & Young hasn't commented yet, the Wall Street Journal says it's possible that the firm will settle out of court.
Our own Eve Trow here in Los Angeles. Thank you, Eve.
Thanks.
It's a mixed bag for the markets this Monday morning. Asian markets were down a bit, but European markets are looking strong. London's FTSE is up more than 0.5%. U.S. markets will open later this morning. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell just a hair to close at 11,491. Americans have been taking to the malls this holiday season. Mall traffic is up an estimated 10% over last year. MasterCard Spending Pulse reports sales of clothing this season are up nearly 10%. That is a lot of snowman ties and reindeer sweaters.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. And by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com.
The Food and Drug Administration is hammering out rules for drug companies that want to advertise on social media sites. And here's something you don't hear every day. The drug makers themselves are pushing for the rules. Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
More and more Americans are turning to social media sites for information on medications. Drug makers want to join in the fun with ads, but there are obstacles, like how do you cram this into a 140-character tweet?
Other risks include dizziness upon standing, decreases in white blood cells, which can be serious.
There's not much room for drug warnings in a two-line Google ad either. Drug makers have improvised adding links on side effects. John Mack publishes the Pharma Marketing blog. He says drug companies are still holding back from blogs.
If the industry doesn't get involved in this, they're going to really be marginalized in that space.
The FDA has already called some drug companies' social media marketing misleading, but there are no rules yet. Les Funtleiter is a healthcare strategist at Miller Tabak.
They see a marketing opportunity, but they also recognize that there are many ways to run afoul of the regulators.
The FDA says social media guidelines will be out by the end of this year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Need a gift for the man who has everything? How about the Dover Seaport? The historic port may soon be up for sale as the UK struggles to pay off its budget deficit. It's one of the busiest ports in Europe, and it's attracting an unexpected bidder. Christopher Worth has more.
Recession or no recession, this stretch of the English Channel is prime real estate. It's as close as you can get in Britain to the rest of Europe. But instead of looking over to the coast of France, Neil Wiggins turns and takes in Dover's legendary white cliffs that tower over the port.
This is a site that's greeted seafarers throughout the centuries.
Wiggins used to be one of those seafarers. He was born and raised in Dover and would often pass the white cliffs during long journeys at sea.
And I would get a little bit of a rush and excitement. You kept an eye on it all the way down until it was out of sight again.
Now he hopes to purchase this very port where he first set sail. Wiggins heads up a local group called the People's Port. It's concerned that once the port goes up for sale, it will most likely end up with overseas investors. The worry is they'll have little interest in investing in the town of Dover, which has seen tough times.
It's in the local interest and the national interest that it stays here with the people in Dover.
To do that, the People's Port says it can raise about $600 million to buy it from the British government. It also plans to sell what it calls Dovorian bonds. Each person in Dover could buy one for about $15, which would give them a vote in how the port is developed in the future. That's likely to go over well at this local arcade. Owner David Greeley fears foreign owners will cut jobs at the port.
The general feeling in the town is that it should stay in British hands.
But Bob Goldfield, the port's chief executive, dismisses the People's Port's plans.
These things are very emotional, and people feel that it's very much their port. But the Little England way of looking at things just doesn't work nowadays.
He says bringing in private investors will allow the port to borrow money, something it can't do now. And the port can then use that money to grow, which Goldfield says will help the town grow as well. In Dover, England, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
And finally, the University of Arkansas has a new big man on campus, or big retailer. Walmart is launching an on-campus store at the school. The world's largest retailer is headquartered close by in Bentonville. The college store is part of a series of mini Walmarts being launched in 2011. Should be open for business when the students get back from winter break. Yes, the $4 prescriptions will be available, and I'm thinking an all-new section for Cliff Notes and Red Bull. If you have any notes for us, we'd love to hear them. Send us an email at letters@marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Who says you need good business sense to start a company?
I started Threadless without even knowing how we were going to print the t-shirts. I think that's where the innovative business model was formed, was in my ignorance.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How to turn a t-shirt company into a going concern and keep it creative at the same time. That's next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.